friends, what I intend to do in this class is to sketch the metaphysics of Advaita. In other words, the metaphysical entities that Advaita talks about, are the background or are the backdrop of the experiential reality, that is Jiva, Jagat and Ishwara. So usually I was telling Mr. Janakramanji that I used to teach for 6 months metaphysics. You know, we teach Advaita at very, you know, in a very, for a long time, so in the at length. So but I have concised everything to 45 minutes back. I hope I will be able to reach you. Yes. So before beginning with metaphysics, we must understand the distinction that the Advaita makes between two standpoints. The transcendental standpoint, that is paramarthika, and empirical standpoint, that is vyavaharika points of view. That is the absolute and the relative standpoints. This distinction is important since Advaita accepts something called world from the vyavaharika point of view. It accepts plurality from a real relative standpoint. At the same time, it holds that this vyavaharika point of view is characterized by the individual who is conditioned by ignorance. The jiva is ignorant of the supreme reality. All activities of such an individual are born out of action, and he is the enjoyer of the fruits of action, that is, he is the jnata, karta and bhokta. Jiva plays this triple role in the vyavaharika plane, that is, which is conditioned by avidya. This role playing is because of avidya, the foundational ignorance. The entire vyavaharika standpoint can be characterized as a state of ignorance, that is ajnana avastha according to Advaita, or ajnana avidya dasa. By contrast, paramarthika standpoint must be characterized as a state of knowledge or vidya dasa. So the distinction between paramarthika and vyavaharika standpoints is the distinction between the standpoint of knowledge and standpoint of ignorance. This has to be kept in mind before we proceed in doing Advaita metaphysics. This distinction between paramarthika and vyavaharika standpoints is the distinction expressed by Advaita, and Advaita says that it has the Shruti support. There are many Shruti passages to support this idea. The distinction is not an imagination of Advaita, but central teaching of Shruti according to pre, post and Sankara's tradition. Pre-Sankara, post-Sankara and Sankara's tradition. Thus, Shruti does not unconditionally accept duality, but You know, yatra dvaita miva bhavati, that Shruti says, yatra dvaita miva bhavati, tatra itaraha itaram pashyati. Where it looks like duality, where there is involvement of duality, as it were, there only a person can see another person. Yatra sarva ekamev abhut, where everything becomes one, tatra kaha kam pashyet, who will see what? There is no question of perceiving another object of cognition. So, after speaking about such a duality, Shruti says that there is no duality when the truth is known. Jnate dvaitam navidyate. Once you know the truth, the reality, there is no duality. This is Gaudapada Karika. Duality disappears on its own accord. Shruti ultimately establishes non-duality as paramarthika and as the only real entity. Advaita sometimes makes use of a different terminology for the above. He talks of two kinds of vision. One is outward vision, parag drishti, looking at the outside, externally, perceiving externally, and inward vision, pratyek drishti corresponding to vyavaharika and paramarthika standpoints or states. Gaudapada summarizes this in a very single statement that all that is spoken in Advaita is only for instruction. You cannot speak even. It is just to instruct. You know, when you instruct something, you do not, you know, you instruct that water has to be drunk or food has to be eaten. You don't eat or drink food there. Okay? In other words, what all is instruction has theoretical value. So, that is what Gaudapada says. Upadesat ayam vadaha. It is all for instruction. Jnate, once known, there is no duality. The strength of the Advaita lies in this distinction. And if it can be proved that this distinction is untenable, then Advaita will tumble down. And if not understood, this distinction is not understood, Advaita would look like a bundle of contradictions. What is claimed at the Vyavaharika level is true at that level alone there, but it is false from the Paramarthika level. Is it possible to make such a transition from one level to another? Advaitins say it is very much possible. For that he cites the case of the states of experience, the avasthas. Whatever is claimed at the waking level is denied in the dream level as well as in sleep level. And same thing is the case with the dream level objects. The dream level is denied at the waking level. So the distinction between the levels is possible like waking or dream state. So on what basis does Advaita make this distinction between Paramarthika and Vyavaharika? He says Advaita, this is the cornerstone of Advaita. It is made on the basis of avidya maya. The avidya is the key concept in Advaita. It is sometimes, as I have told you, it is characterized as the cornerstone of Advaita. In other words, the strength of Advaita lies in the way in which Advaitin explains avidya. The word has been commonly used in almost all the schools, but has been interpreted in a particular, in some way or other. Okay, even Vishishta Advaitin, Dvaitin, everybody has to say what Maya means. Unfortunately, the opponent schools, those who are opposed to Advaita, they say that Advaita is Mayavada, which does not seem to be right. That is what the post-Sankarites always try to say. Sorry, post-Sankara, other non-Advaitins have tried to see that it is all Mayavada. It is all, you are talking from a Maya plane. you are not talking from the reality. So, but Sankara calls it as Brahmavada or Upanishad Darsana. Advaita is not interested in explaining Maya but Brahman. That is the difference. It is not talking about it. The Maya comes on the way of analyzing. That is what I have given in the handout also. What is the result of this distinction? From the Paramarthika standpoint, there is only one reality. But from the Vyavaharika standpoint, Advaita speaks of three things: Ishvara, Jiva and Jagat. It is here in the Vyavaharika plane that the philosophical triangle arises. This means that so long as there is empirical world, there will be plurality of Jiva, Jagat and Ishvara and all that is implied by plurality. Once avidya is destroyed, the plurality and its implications would disappear and what remains is the sole reality, that is Brahmanatman. Whether one experiences plurality or non-duality depends on the continuity or non-continuity of avidya. When there is avidya, one is helplessly in the empirical realm, and once a person is in empirical realm, he is in the lap of avidya. When there is no avidya, one is in the absolute realm. Gaudapada says that once that is known, there is no duality at all. Advaita accepts different entities like scripture, teacher, disciple, everything, even Ishvara at the empirical level, as I have told, distinctions are accepted only for the sake of instruction, and once the truth is known, the empirical pyramid, the whole empirical reality falls down or disappears. So no one can ever say that the Advaita is inconsistent, since it talks of both non-duality and duality, you know. He talks about two things at a time. There is a world of difference in the standpoints from which both statements are made. If Brahman Atman is the sole reality, where it is? Where does it stay, or what is the place? This reality is immanent in our experiences. See, Advaita always goes back or goes to one's experience. This reality is immanent in our experiences. In philosophy, a contrast is usually made between two words. One is immanent, another is transcendent. The Vaishnava schools talk of transcendental nature of God. But in Advaita, supreme reality is something which is immanent. It is in you. It is here and in me, and it is never outside me. Thus, not only Vaishnava, even Saiva, you know, the theistic schools, all theistic schools would say that God is transcendent. Of course, Vishishta Advaita says that it is immanent in a different angle, but it is Paratva is always accepted. It is Paratva. Saulabhya is there, but Paratva. In bringing Saulabhya, you can have some amount of immanence of God in you, but it is Paratva. It is para. The soul reality is immanent in our experiences, cut or involved in our experiences. If so, then this kind of inquiry cannot be speculative. See, we have speculative metaphysics, you know, the later Western philosophy, they try to say something called speculative exercise of metaphysics. It is not like that. When one tries to analyze one's experiences, none can say that he is speculating. When speculation is not possible to directly perceived entities, the experience of any individual can be in the three levels of waking, dream and deep sleep, and there is no fourth level in the ordinary parlance. These levels are so directly presented to a person and his experiences, he can never be called to be speculative when he inquires into these states. Speculation is possible only with regard to remote things and unknown things, like, you know, Vaikuntha or Kailasa or some such place. You can have speculation what would be there. But speculation is not possible when you are talking about you and your own experiences. Hence, Advaita says that either one attains the realization here and now. The realization is not after death, because it is not speculative. It talks about immanence. It is an immanent philosophy. Metaphysics is immanent in your own experiences. So, Advaita talks that the liberation can be had here and now, because it is you, your experiences. The possibility of Jivan Mukti has been accepted in Advaita. The soul reality, which is given to one's direct experience, is therefore, you know, one way we can speak of it is transcendent from a different way, transcendental. What does this transcendent means? Now I have told that it is immanent. And again, if you have to say that it is para, how does it become para? Transcendent in the sense that the Brahman Atman is outside the body-mind complex. See, it is you, but you have not been able to see it, what it is beyond or transcending your body and mind. That is what the transcendence means here. That is what the transcendent means here. The metaphysics of Advaita therefore can be called as, or characterized as, the metaphysics of experience. Now a question may arise as to what is the relation between this reality, that is Brahman, and Jiva Jagat and Ishvara. Brahman alone, according to Advaita, appears as the Jiva and Ishvara on the one hand, and also as the world on the other. This reality alone appears as the sentient and insentient principles, and this appearance is because of the ignorance, avidya, maya. Jiva, Ishvara and the world are nothing but Brahman. They are all Brahman, dressed in different empirical dresses. This is what Hiriyana says, that the Jiva, Ishvara and Jagat are Brahman dressed in empirical dresses. Difference exists among the three in the empirical sense, but all the three are essentially the same Brahman in the absolute sense. Advaita never speaks of the identity between Jiva and Ishvara as such. See, Jiva as such is not Ishvara as such. Jiva is identical with Brahman, and Ishvara is identical with Brahman, and thus Jiva is essentially Ishvara. Jiva is not identical with Ishvara, it is essentially Ishvara. Both Ishvara and Jiva are conditioned entities. They are sopadhika tattvas. Because there is upadhi, avidya is the upadhi. Both are combination of the consciousness and avidya, that is ignorance or nescience, whatever you say. In other words, it is chaitanya, consciousness conditioned by two kinds of upadhis that which make Jiva and Ishvara. Jiva and Ishvara being vishishta or conditioned entities qualified by two upadhis, they can never be identical, like a red rose and a yellow rose. You know, they are conditioned by two different entities, therefore they cannot be just identical. They are essentially identical. What I mean to say is, they may be essentially same, but they are not apparently identical. You cannot say that Jiva is Ishvara. But that is why I am telling this is, most of the time Vaishnava schools have all attacked Advaita saying, oh, you are Jiva, you are telling that Maya, they are also Maya, so both are same. No, that is not how Advaita puts it. So Jiva is Brahman conditioned by avidya or antakarana. God does not have antakarana, and Ishvara is Brahman conditioned by Maya. So Advaita never says that Jiva and Ishvara are identical as the very sopadhika tattvas, but he says that Jiva is essentially consciousness, and Ishvara is essentially consciousness, and from the standpoint of consciousness, yes, Jiva is Brahman and is identical with Ishvara, which is also Brahman. That is how he tries to do Jiva and Ishvara. Define Jiva and Ishvara. Both can never be identical as such. Jiva Brahmeva Naparaha. If the Jiva is Brahman, no, not in that way. Not any Jiva is Brahman. Not as such. In order to explain how the Brahman Atman appears as the insentient world, Advaita gives the analogy of a rope snake. Okay, this is how the Brahman conditioned by mind becomes Jiva. Conditioned by Maya becomes Ishvara. What about the world? Now, Advaita has a very different methodology to prove or come to or define world. Advaita gives the analogy of a rope snake. Rope is the reality on which snake is superimposed. So also Brahman Atman is the reality upon which Jagat or the world is superimposed. And hence, as the reality of the rope snake, that is a rope snake, snake is rope, similarly, the reality of the world is Brahman alone. What is the difference between the Jiva and Ishvara and Brahman? Consider a crystal which is pure and colorless, appearing red because of the proximity of a red flower. If you put a red flower in proximity to a crystal, the crystal will look red. Redness is the quality of the flower, and it gets reflected in the crystal, and crystal appears to be red in color. Similarly here, Brahman Atman is consciousness and pure, devoid of any quality. It is pure knowledge, devoid of any characteristics whatsoever. In the presence of antakarana or avidya, the consciousness becomes conditioned by the qualities of antakarana, like change, limitations, all that happens, etc. In other words, consciousness reflects in the mind and assumes the conditions of antakarana as the knower, doer or enjoyer. You know, it is just like the red rose being in proximity to a spatika, a crystal. The spatika takes the color, like that. So, like that, the consciousness reflects in the mind and assumes the conditions of antakarana as the knower, doer and enjoyer. Hiranyaka says that when the antakarana is inspired by consciousness, you know, by itself it cannot do. There must be inspiration from the consciousness. It becomes knower, actor and enjoyer. Who is that knower? The material antakarana cannot be knower by itself. We have seen in my last lectures, we have tried to see that antakarana according to Advaita is a matter. It is material. Pure consciousness also cannot be the knower, since a physical medium is necessary for knowledge. Neither electricity nor bulb alone can give light. The bulb inspired by the electricity alone can produce light. So also here the antakarana, which is pervaded by the consciousness, alone is the knower. By antakarana, by bulb cannot give any light. There is no inspiration of electricity. Electricity by itself will not give light. In the same way, antakarana, which is material, cannot know, because it has no knowledge. It is not having any sense, material. Brahman, it is only knowledge. It has to have a medium for manifestation, and it can, by itself it cannot give any knowledge. So both are required for the knowledge to arise, knowledge of objects to arise. So coming back to the example of crystal, as even the redness is associated with the crystal, so also the qualities of antakarana is associated with consciousness, and consciousness looks as if it is limited, as if it is jnata, karta and bhukta. Really speaking, the consciousness does not have any of those qualities, even when it looks so. It remains like a crystal. See, crystal may take the color, but it does not become red. Because of some errors, we do not see the Brahman Atman, but only the world. And this is what Advaitin talks as nirupadhika Brahma. There is no upadhi for which this Brahma, the world knowledge has come. We see the world because of an illusion which is not non-conditional. I will tell you what it is. In so much so, due to some error, we do not perceive the pure consciousness also. See, we perceive the world and we do not see the consciousness, but experience the conditioned consciousness as the knower, etc. This is called as sopadhika brahma. See, like sopadhika means when there is what? The red flower, the crystal gets the color. If it is not there, there will be crystal will remain as colorless. See, that is why it is called as sopadhika, conditional. See, when there is no antakarana, Brahman remains as it is. When there is antakarana, it becomes karta, jnata and bhukta. I think you understand, no? Sopadhi, upadhi, antakarana is the upadhi. For world, there is no upadhi. There is no upadhi. There is no snake near the rope to become, make it a rope. It becomes snake by itself, without any conditional factor besides it. So, this is called as sopadhika brahma. The same is the case with Ishvara also. In the proximity of the upadhi, that is maya, Brahman or consciousness is conditioned by it, and that is Ishvara. Maya, being a wonderful power, limitless in nature, Ishvara, who is the consciousness conditioned by it, is also omniscient, omnipotent and like. Advaitin accepts the Maya Vritti. I was telling about Maya Vritti earlier, that Maya is a very, it is capable of making the God omniscient. That type of power it has. Thus, the appearance of the world, individual and God, explained by Advaita in the Vyavaharika, this is how the Vyavaharika level Jiva Jagat and Ishvara are explained. Crystal appears red because of presence of a conditioning factor, that is upadhi, red flower, and so it is sopadhika brahma. The perception of the red crystal continues even after knowing that the crystal is colorless. Please try to understand. Even after knowing that crystal is colorless, if there is a flower, the red color would look inside the crystal would look red. the person of the red crystal continues even after knowing that the crystal is colorless. This is the example given for Brahman, Atman appearing as Jiva and Ishvara. Even though we know Brahman, Atman is without any characteristics, we say I am Jnata. It continues. Jnata, Karta and Bhukta continues even in spite of having the generally, not a specific knowledge about the or attributelessness of Ishvara. But in the case of rope snake, rope appears as snake without the help of any upadhi nearby. The snake does not stay nearby to make a rope appear as a snake. This type of Brahma is called as a nirupadhika Brahma, unconditional illusion, delusion. In this case, once the rope is known, the snake does not appear anymore. The example is given by Advaitin for the appearance of Brahman as the world. This example, because once you know, world is not there. The world no more remains valid for you. In other words, these are called as samsarga adhyasa and swarupa adhyasa. I don't have time to discuss about that. These are two approaches to the study of reality. There are two approaches to the study of reality. One is objective approach, another is subjective approach, and there is one more, that is synthetic approach, both combining both, objective approach. We see the external world, we experience it, the external object comprises of so many objects. Now we are interested in knowing how this world, which is physical and material in nature, come into being. What is its cause? One way by means of which we know a particular thing is to try to know the cause of that thing. So when we want to understand this world, we naturally question about the cause of the world. To know anything is to know the cause of that thing. In ordinary experience, we see that all objects, pot, table, etc. have a cause. And so we want to know the cause of the world and also which contains objects that come under the cause-effect relationship. Everything can be understood only through cause-effect relationship, isn't it? What is the cause of that? Why it is like this? Once we start with cause-effect explanation, it will take us to what we call in philosophy as the first cause. There must be a first cause, starting from the ordinary cause, and finally we arrived at the notion of a first cause because the series cannot go on endlessly. And for the first cause, we cannot ask for another cause. The very concept of a first cause is given only to put an end to this series of cause and effect, and that is the root, that first cause is the root cause. Now, what is this first cause? Considering the pot, the effect being material, the cause clay also is material, so the material clay is the first cause. So also, if this world is material, then on the above analogy, the first cause also should be material. Following this line of reasoning, we arrive only at that. The first cause has to be material for the world. Adopting the objective method, we will have to say that the cause or the source of the physical world must itself be material. So the first cause is the primordial material stuff, which is accepted in Indian and Western philosophical thinking. In India, the Samkhya school traces the entire world to Prakriti or Pradhana, which is material. Through some evolutionary process, the world has come into existence from Prakriti. The world including mind and ego, comes out of that. Nyaya Vaisheshika holds the view that the atoms are the first cause of the world. The Samkhya advocates Parinama Vada, that is Satkaryavada, and Naya advocates Asatkaryavada or Arambhavada. Charvaka and certain many Western and Eastern schools also view that the matter is the source of entire physical universe. The point is this. At one point or another, materialism arises when one takes the objective approach and all problems connected with materialism will arise. The second is subjective approach. This consists of analysis of one's own experience and relating it to the cause and effect as the pointer or the clue to the study of reality. When I begin to study my experience, what do I find? I can tell about the experience of the table, chair, ocean, mountain, etc. Hence, I can only talk about certain impressions, that is ideas, thoughts or sensations in me. When I consider any particular object, I have some sense impressions about them, and as a result of this, I say that I experience that particular object as a whole. It is not an objective approach, it is subjective. How do I know the object? From that I analyze in my mind what would be the cause of this object. All objects are experienced by one as a bundle of impressions, including the human form. This subjective approach leads to different isms, like subjectivism, solipsism, etc. There are so many things. Now, synthetic approach of Advaita. This Advaita combines both the objective approach and subjective approach to reality. By combining both, Advaita overcomes the defect of exclusive objective or subjective approaches. It is of course not a mechanical combination of objective and subjective approaches. It is based on the Upanishads, Advaita says. The objective approach consists in tracing the entire world to five elements and tracing those elements to Brahman and Maya. Here the first cause is Brahman, associated with Maya or Prakriti. This is technically called as Ishvara or Saguna Brahman. Brahman by itself is not cause of anything or effect of anything. Brahman along with Maya is the first cause, and it is not material since it consists of a sentient entity. That is Brahman. Brahman and Maya. Maya is the material, Brahman is the sentience. Now the subjective approach according to Advaita consists in analyzing three states of experience. Dream, waking dream and deep sleep. These three states exhaust human experience. There is no fourth state. All the human experiences can be brought under these three. On the analysis of the three states, we find that the self alone is present in all the states, while other entities like mind, body, etc. exist only in the only in some states and in not in all the states. See, Advaita very particularly says, in deep sleep state there is no avidya, which is controverted later by certain Advaitins, and Ramanuja comes heavily down upon this point. He says, I remain in the deep sleep state. On the basis of this subjective approach, Advaitin says that self alone is the reality, since that alone is uniformly present in all the three states. Now, on the basis of subjective approach, Advaita arrives at the first cause to be the Ishvara, which is Brahman and Maya combined. On the subjective approach, he arrives at the self to be the changeless reality. And through the synthetic approach, Advaitin arrives at the conclusion that what is thought of as the first cause, that is Ishvara, is what is thought of as the reality from the subjective point of view, and the same thing when thought of as the consciousness are not two different things. That means Ishvara, which is the objectively understood first cause, Brahman, which is subjectively understood first cause, are not different. That is what Advaitin says. What is real then? For Advaita, that is real which remains constant, which does not get sublated, which remains unchanging, unsublated. Brahman, which is the first cause, remains unsublated. So based on this definition of reality, Brahman and the self are identical as the reality, but is considered as the reality on the subjective side and the objective side, converge at one and the same point. This identity of the self and Brahman is what is taught by the Mahavakyas, having Shruti as its final import. Now, the reality can be defined in two ways. One is the definition in terms of accidental attributes and definition in terms of essential nature. The first is called as Tatastha Lakshana, second is called as Swarupa Lakshana. This way of proceeding to define the reality is methodical. Advaitin says that this is what is sampradaya. Sampradayikam. Advaitin starts with tatastha lakshana and proceeds to swarupa lakshana, which is the final definition. Ultimately, there is only one definition and not two. Or rather, there is no definition at all from the final standpoint. How can you define Brahman? Because words are to be there to define Brahman. Words will not be there. Words come under sabda prapancha. So you have to take something which is from the world to work with something which is not the world. That is difficult. That is why Advaitin says that from final standpoint there can be no definition at all. If there is only one definition, then why do you start from something else? If there is, you know, if you say that tatastha swarupa lakshana is the only definition, then why do you start from tatastha lakshana? Because Advaitin says it is because we must always proceed from something known to something unknown. See, when you say asvatoma sadgamaya, it is not from out of total ignorance you go to knowledge. That is not the meaning. The meaning is from less knowledge take me to the better knowledge. That is the meaning. It is not from ignorance take the, from ignorance you cannot come to knowledge. From less knowledge, because you have to stand somewhere. You have to have some knowledge. Because we must always proceed from something known to something unknown. The classical example for this methodology is called as Sakha Chandra Nyaya or Arundhati Nyaya. You saw the moon by pointing out to the branch of a tree. You know, suppose somebody does not see the moon, then that is the way to show the moon. And so Advaitin starts with Tatastha Lakshana, the definition for accidents, and proceeds to Swarupa Lakshana, discarding the first one, and take the Swarupa Lakshana to be final, so long as the usage of language is permitted. And this Swarupa Lakshana is first expressed affirmatively, then negatively. So such an approach is essential because Brahman is not an object of knowledge in commonly accepted sense of the term. It is aprameya. Brahman is aprameya. Any object of knowledge is material. Everything other than Brahman is an object of knowledge and so material. According to Advaita, everything other than Brahman is material. And whatever is material is saguna, attributed. There is no difficulty in describing by means of language anything that is saguna. That which has quality, you can always take it on the on your side of the language. Since Brahman is not saguna, not matter, and not an object of knowledge, there arises the difficulty in defining Brahman. So the problem of several definitions, and by discarding one, Advaitin goes to the other and understands that in a very particular way. Now, tatastha lakshana. For this, Advaitin says that the reality is the source, support, and end of the world. Of all these, yatova imani bhutani jayante, that statement. Brahman is said to be the source of the world. It being the first cause, as even clay is the first cause, or first source of the pot, the effect. The clay is not only the source of the pot, but also the support of the pot. If you take away clay from the pot, there will be no pot. Being the material cause of the pot, so also pure Brahman, Brahman is the first cause, the material cause of the world. It is also the support of the whole world. When the pot is destroyed, it goes back to the clay. So also when the Brahman is the Brahman is the end of everything. All beings become one with Brahman, the final cause at the end. The same explanation holds good with Vivarta example also. See, Vivarta example means rope becoming snake. Transfiguration. When the rope is gone, you can always see the snake goes back to the rope. Snake merges into the rope. From rope it comes and it is sustained by the rope. If you take away rope, snake will go. So this is the provisional definition of Brahman, in which we try to explain associating Brahman with the world of cause and effect relationship. Explaining the nature of Brahman in terms of causality is relational because of that very reason that it relates Brahman to the world. It is why you say, see, you can give such a definition. But it cannot be drawn like that because it relates Brahman, which is non-relational, to the world. This definition would hold good only on the assumption that there is something called world, and also that the world requires a cause. Thirdly, one has to show that the cause of the world is Brahman and not anything else. Given these assumptions, the definition, the Tathastha Lakshana holds good. But actually speaking, the Brahman is non-relational. Asangohi ayam purushaha. Upanishad also said that it is ekam eva advitiyam. How can such a Brahman have any relationship with the world? So the definition is formulated only based on certain assumptions. When the student demands for a cause of this world and it is provisional, it goes against the very nature of Brahman, and therefore Advaita makes use of it to start with and gives up later and proceeds with the second definition. In the first definition, the causality that is attributed to Brahman is something accidental to Brahman and not its essential nature. We understand normally everything in terms of cause and effect. And so, to understand Brahman, the Advaitin starts with this sort of a definition, making use of causality. Swarupa Lakshana is given as Satyam Jnanam Anantam Brahma. In Tattastha Lakshana, the Brahman becomes Saprapancha. It becomes with the world as the result of this type of definition. While Brahman itself is Akasmic Nisprapancha, that goes against the very basic view of Advaita. Even this Swarupa Lakshana is worked out in two stages. One is affirmatively, the other is negatively. Affirmatively, the Brahman is spoken of as real knowledge and infinite by its very nature. This has to be understood along the line of the statements like heat constitutes the essence of fire, coolness constitutes the nature of ice, and the like. We never say that heat and cold are the nature of the objects. On the other hand, we say that it is its. We do not say that heat and We say that they are all in its very nature, very being, because fire is not fire without heat. Quality of an object is such that it cannot be replaced by another quality without causing any change to the identity of the object. Say, unripe mango. The unripeness is a quality of mango. Ripe mango. Ripe is another adjective of mango. So, the without changing the basic status or structure of the object, you can go on adding qualities. That will not hamper the object. This means that qualities may come and go. Qualities may come and go. But when we talk about the nature of essence of something, it is something that gives the identity to the object. And in its absence, the object loses its identity and existence. If there is no heat in the fire, then it ceases to be fire. No object can give up its essential nature. Or in other words, every object is what it is because of its essential nature. Change in the essential nature of a thing amounts to cessation of that thing. That being so, Advaitin says that the essential nature of Brahman is reality, knowledge and infinite. Satyam Jnanam Anantam. Ramanuja objects to this definition. Ramanuja says that an object can have only one essential nature. You have three. Satyam Jnanam Anantam. Say fire does not have heat, cold and neither heat nor cold. There are no more than one quality for fire. Character, essential nature for fire. In the same way, you have to say Brahman is something only one, if at all you want to say. Several accidental features are possible, but one essential nature. But we can have only one. So, how can Brahman have three natures like reality, knowledge and infinity? You must stop with one definition, that is what Ramanuja claims. Can any object have plurality of essence? Nahi vastu vikalpate, Ramanuja says. That is, you know, vastu will come with its essential quality nature. It will not have vikalpas. There are three words in the definition of Brahman. Each word has its own meaning and they are not synonymous. Upanishad will not use words superfluously. So, the three words must have definite purpose, a reason for its usage, that is Prabhutti Nimitta in Vaishya he says. So how will you explain the three words as the essential nature of Brahman, since plurality of essence is impossible? For Ramanuja, Satyam, Jnanam, Anantam are qualities of Brahman, which is a substance possessing qualities. Brahman is Ananta Kalyana Guna Ganaika Nilayaha. Brahman is the house, the repository of Ananta, infinite number of auspicious qualities. Though Brahman possesses infinite qualities, only three are mentioned here according to Ramanuja. See, the Upanishad cannot write all the qualities. So three qualities are mentioned in a representative way. He calls them as ontological attributes according to Ramanuja. They classify it in a different way also. Attribute of Brahman is itself, and attribute of Brahman in relation to chit and achit. See, Ramanuja says that the attributes are two types: essential attributes and attributes which are related to the chit and achit. First one is called as swarupa lakshana, and second one is called as swarupa nirupaka lakshana dharma. Ramanuja says that everything in this world is saguna. See, without guna there is nothing. God has qualities. There is no pramana to know an object which is nirguna. The pramana is not possible. Advaitin rejects Ramanuja's contention. Every object, Advaitin says, has only one essential nature. We agree with this. There is no controversy about that. All also we agree that the words used here are not synonymous. They are not superfluous. But all the three words are used to bring out the essential nature of one entity, that is Brahman. The essential nature, which is one and the same, is brought out in three different ways. In this sentence, the entity is Brahman, which is defined, and the definition is Satyam, Jnanam, Anantam. There is no problem if the words refer to the same object. We are not talking about three other different things. But problem is in the explanation that the words bring about the essential nature of Brahman. How is the essential nature brought about? Now, one may think that this infinite Brahman is material, because we know the world to be material. Brahman and its cause. Brahman is its cause, and so the Brahman has to be material, as if in the clay example. Yes. So, clear example, Upanishad says that it is not so. It is not material. It is what? It is jnanam. It is knowledge. So the Brahman, which is infinite, is also jnana sarupa, and it is not jada. It is not insentient. The word jnana is used to negate the possibility that it is material. Okay? Let it be finite and knowledge, but all knowledge is temporary. Knowledge can be temporary according to Nayaka. It comes and goes. There is no consistency about knowledge. To negate this possibility, there comes the third term, that is the first term in the list, that is Satyam, to ensure that the reality is permanent. Okay, Satyam. In this definition, each word is used for a definite purpose. In the case of a Neelam Utpalam, a blue lotus, there is nothing contradictory, no conflict in their meanings. Neelam can be Utpalam and Utpalam can be Neelam. But in case of Satyam, Jnanam, etc., there is no such agreement. What is Satyam need not be Jnanam. See, that is what Ramanuja finds the fault with Shankara, Shankara school. And what is Jnanam need not be Anantam. So taking the primary meaning of these words, we see that they are not compatible. They are incompatible. There is a conflict in their meaning. But the words are used in grammatical coordination. We will have to refer to the same object. You know, object, and such a conflict should not arise. And therefore, we shall have to consider the secondary meaning. That is what Shankara school says. Though the sentence is affirmative, it has to be understood, interpreted negatively. The negative meaning happens to be the secondary meaning here. Shankara says that the word Satyam functions negatively. The objects experienced in day-to-day world are impermanent. Brahman is permanent. Hence, it is different from Anrita Vastu. What is Satyam? Anrita Vastu Rahitatva. That is Satyam. In which there is no Asatya Vastu. the Upanishad words uses the word satyam to indicate that Brahman is an entity different from all the anrita entities. Secondly, objects experienced are insentient jada. Upanishad uses the word jnanam to indicate that Brahman is not a jada. Because you see, you can always say that the objects experienced in the world are jada. So is Brahman jada? No. Therefore, the definition goes to say that it is not jada, it is not insentient. Thirdly, objects experienced are limited in nature, limited by space, time and objectivity. Desa kala vastu parichinna. You know, the worldly objects have desa. You understand something at a particular place, at that time, and through that object. So, that is the, any object is limited with these three things. So, the word anantam is used to show that the Brahman is not limited by these three factors. It is different from the limited objects. So, the word satyam, etc., have to be understood in a negative way. This is the Swarupa Lakshana of Brahman. Essentially, Brahman is without any qualities, and hence Upanishad says what it is not. That is, that you, the inequality, you know, will always talk about a material thing. Therefore, Brahman is something which, to which the neither quality nor matter can reach. That is why it is said as yato vacho nivartante. The mode of interpreting the word satyam is a negative manner is supported by another sruti, that asthula, ananu, etc. Yes. So strictly speaking, we do not have two definitions, Brahma as tatastha and swarupa. We start with one and drop it because of its limitation and take the other one ultimately. There is no doubt. I'll skip some portions. Already we are... Now I'll just conclude. The Brahman... Yes, I've just dealt with what it means by jnanam. Brahman is jnanam means whether it is swaprakasa jnanam. You know, what is the swaprakasa according to Advaita? Swaprakasa means it reveals itself and reveals other objects. It does not need any other thing to reveal itself. And then what is it mean by anantam? Anantam means sajatiya, vijatiya, swagata, veda, rahitattva, anantattva. So that is what we have seen.
I'm so sorry, is this the lecture on women in Assyria?
No.
I'm so sorry.
Okay. So, at last I have shown how Advaitin talks Brahman as Ananda. Brahman is also spoken of as Ananda, bliss. Advaitin say that the happiness we enjoy in our daily life is derived from Brahman. And this is, for this, the states of experience are analyzed. Considering the deep sleep state, a person who recollects about that after waking up says, I slept happily. The statement is made in the waking state about the deep sleep state, and the past person singular is used, that I felt happy or I slept happily. In the sleep state, the senses and mind do not function, and still there is an experience of bliss. What is available in sleep is only the self. Therefore, the Advaitin says that the self which is left alone in sleep state is bliss by its very nature. It is the bliss of the self that is recollected later by a person. We experience happiness in our daily life. We claim that we derive happiness from the enjoyment, experience of objects. Our idea is that objects are the sources of our happiness. It is not so. In the waking dream state, it appears as if we are deriving joy out of external objects. In the deep sleep, we do not experience any object at all. If object is the source of happiness, then there will be no happiness in the state of deep sleep. The reflection of the knowledge and bliss in that is it happens in an ordinary mind, and knowledge aspect gets reflected. In an ordinary mind, knowledge aspect gets reflected. If I am happiness, then all the times I should be happy. Why not I am happy? If essentially I know myself, I have knowledge all the times. For that, Advaitin say, knowledge aspect gets reflected in the mind easily. In ordinarily you think that you know, but all the times you do not think that you are happy. It is because, he says, the bliss aspect should be reflected, the mind should be extremely pure. That is what Abhijitin says. The purity of mind depends upon the absence of desires. Hence, the more desire-free a person is, the more pure he is and more happy he is. So, the self is bliss by its own nature, it does not get manifested in a person always, because he thinks I am anapya, I am samsari. Thus, according to Advaita, the Brahman is of the nature of reality, knowledge and bliss. Thank you. Any question you have? Yeah.
What was the
Pratyak Drishti? Pratyak Drishti means looking into one's own self, looking inward. Pratyak. Parag means which, you know, where you use yourself to look into you, where you use body, mind and senses to look at the other things, indriyas. That is the difference. Drishti is of two types, yes. Yes.
And
satyam
is asatyam.
Abhava.
Isn't that circular?
No. See, it is done like that because, see, the whole question of Swarupa Lakshana according to Advaita is to relate the three words to Brahman. So now if you say that satyam is Brahman directly, through direct implication, the problem, there are problems. It becomes an attribute. In order to do away with Sangha, Ramanuja's the objection.
You either get an attribute or you get three, like you were saying, you get
three things, three characteristics it becomes.
Right, because you can't attribute those.
Exactly. He says that these are three ways of looking at the same thing. Therefore, they are not three attributes or three characteristics. They are one thing, talked in three different ways. In Brahman, there is absence of unreality. In Brahman, there is absence of non-knowledge. Like that. I think some class is there. Yeah. Anything else? Ram? Clear? Thank you. So the next class, we are dealing with the liberation. I'll liberate you from Advaita.
Yes. Shall I put it here?
Yeah, it's hot.
That's all?
Yeah, it's locked.